You're listening to another episode of HR Talk. It's our pleasure to be back here for you this week. And this week, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a very special guest, one of the premier HR training professionals in all of the southeastern United States is sitting in the studio with Ricky right now. We have Craig in the house, and we're going to be talking about leadership and all the fun things that go with that. Maybe even a little bit more training, building a team, things of that nature. Hey, let me turn the keys to the castle over to the Orlando A1A Beachfront Avenue studio. Ricky, over to you, sir. How you doing today?
I love my new address on A1A Beachfront Avenue. I'm telling you, it's sunny. It's beautiful. It really is the best. I'm doing good down here, sir. And you?
Hey, doing all right. Doing all right. It's getting hot up here, Rick. I mean, it's got to be at least in the 80s now. And I had to turn the window fan off. You know, it's brutal. It's crushing the heat.
So wait. So first of all, let me introduce who we have here because I had to.
Absolutely.
He passed out because of listening to you talking about how hot 80 degrees is. So in the studio today, we have Mr. Craig Lee. And let me tell you about Craig. This guy right here, you are absolutely right. He is the premier learning and development wizard. That's what I call him.
He's a
learning
wizard.
And development wizard. Wow. Lima Delta Whiskey. That's your name from now on, Craig. So, Craig, I've known him for about 12 years or so.
And
3 months. So he's keeping track. I'm not. Oh, wow. We got the – all right.
That's our Craig horn.
So whenever you say something impactful, that's going to come
good.
Up.
Oh, that's good.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you everybody here, Mr. Craig Lee.
Hey, Ricky. That was impactful right there.
It really was impactful.
Uh-huh.
How you doing, Craig?
I'm fantastic.
Right. So, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
What do I do?
What do you do?
I touch and change the world with the love of HR.
You touch?
Where's the horn?
I know, right? That was impactful.
I'll say it again.
Hold on. Let's do it again.
Powerful. It's
in slow motion.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I touch and change the world with the love of HR. Everywhere I go.
Dropped a bomb that time.
Touch and change the world.
Yeah. So, I'm about ready to touch and change this podcast right here.
I can see the next episode.
The next
sexual harassment. You shouldn't touch anything.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
Wow. No, that's true. Yeah.
All right. So you touch and change the world with HR, about HR. Do you like HR? Does HR like you?
HR loves me because I can walk into any organization, any team. I can just basically feel if there's a high trust environment, if people like each other, if they don't like each other, I fix it.
Wow. JC missed a spot again.
I know. He's up.
He had a great opportunity to do the little Craig Horn? Is that what you call him?
I didn't want to overuse it, that's all. We do have a lot of impactful stuff. I mean, it would probably wind up being 45 minutes of nothing but horns behind everything this guy's got to say. It'll sound like
that's
the freaking apocalypse, you know what I mean?
I know.
Absolutely.
Apocalypse,
okay.
Woo.
Yeah, so
revelation.
Revelation.
I got a lot of revelation stuff going on here.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so.
Ask me a question.
I will ask you a question.
Okay.
All right. How long have you been doing this learning and development stuff?
How long?
Yes.
12 years, 3 months, and 6 days.
Why do you like it?
What do I like it?
Yeah.
I get to work with people from all over the world. Not that I get to go everywhere, but...
They come to you.
Yeah. And when you talk about organizational culture, I mean, you get a chance to talk to CEOs, you get to talk to frontline employees. I mean, you get to talk to everybody. It's all good, yeah.
So that's something actually JC and I've been talking about for the past few podcasts. We do a lot of things about the culture of trust, all about teamwork, trusting your employees. Do you trust your employees? Do they trust you?
Yeah.
Should you trust leadership? So when you're talking about culture,
it's all about the culture.
But why now? Because I've noticed in the past 15 years or so that's been a big thing as far as culture is concerned, right? Have you seen? So you've been doing this for 12 years now, right?
Yeah.
So it's in the past, again, 15 years or so, that's been the big buzzword as far as culture and the culture of trust. So why all of a sudden is this such a big thing?
Well, 2008, you know what happened then? Everything imploded, financial markets, everything, businesses, they all laid off people.
Yeah.
And so when organizations started putting themselves back together again, they had a big question. Like, well, what are we going to be like? I mean, what's our culture going to be like? It's something that is not going to go away, whether you got a brand, anytime you got a leadership change, culture changes. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be ready for it. And if you don't have a great culture, it's going to be tough to get new people. And today it's getting tougher to get great people.
Yeah.
So if you don't have your culture right, you're going to be hurting.
I've got a question for you, Craig. When you're talking about that evolutionary change, culture adjustments, building the proper culture to retain employees the right way, what if you find yourself in a position where you're, say, retaining some of the wrong employees for way too long, and it's having that negative impact on your structure? How do you, as an organization, as a leader, take those steps forward to keep people positive, keep good word on the ground, and keep a good environment, but at the same time, focus on those that may have been there for, say, 10 or 52 years too long, and politely show them the way to maybe move on to the next phase of their career, or decide to move on because you're changing the environment at the same time? How do you weed that out?
It's going to take some time, but pretty much what I do right now is spend my efforts in working with leaders, because leaders are the ones who set the culture, and they're the ones who have the most impact. And if you have an employee that's been there a long time, for whatever reason, sometimes they're jaded. Maybe they've had bad bosses before or whatever. And now you're the boss. So what do you do? Well, there's some ways to reengage frontline people, but if organizations do not spend time in helping brand new supervisors prepare them for leadership, you're going to cave.
Pregnant pause. Yeah. Over to you, Ricky. He answered my question perfectly. I mean, that was fantastic. It was impactful. I have Ricky and Craig up on Skype. I could see Ricky staring into his eyes. He was mesmerized by the words of Craig right there. The Sky Vodka, one of the two. I don't know what took hold.
I just didn't want to interrupt. I mean, you was in a role there, but you're absolutely
maybe
right.
I'll slow down.
No, don't slow down. Don't do that. No, but I happen to agree with you quite a bit.
Which part?
It's as far as the leadership, they're the ones who are responsible of setting the tone of the culture and the culture on its own. So, but it's from an employee's perspective, right? What should an employee do to follow that tone of the leader? So if the leader is setting the tone of the culture from an employee's point of view, once he come on board, how do they make a decision whether they should stay on board because of the culture, or should they even try to change the culture as they come along?
That's a lot. In today's job market, you hire somebody right now and you get them on board, they're already, if it's not a great culture, if they don't have a really good working relationship with their boss, they're already looking for someplace else to go. You know, they're taking their breaks and they're going online, they're looking for a new job. You've only got a small window to get somebody really into your business culture, into the family, basically. And today, like I said, that window is closing. And if you don't work diligently to try to get that person on board, they're going to go. It's going to be difficult. So there's a lot that goes into that. That onboarding piece is huge.
So from a leader's perspective, from a leader's point of view, what should they do to make sure that the culture is well received by new employees? Because just because you got a great culture doesn't mean every employee wants to come work.
You have to have a vision. And in that onboarding process, if you do not create a picture of where you're going, and especially with the generational stuff right now, people are coming into the workplace, they're looking for meaning. They're looking for a purpose. They're looking for the big picture.
Okay.
And if you don't have a good handle on that yourself, and you can't sell it, then people are gonna be frustrated, and they're gonna be look for other things. So you've got to do your own personal retreat. You got to get away, and you got to figure out what is it that you're gonna try to do in this world, and how does it come in alignment with what your, I guess, where your organizational vision and mission. But it's what you personally want to see to happen too. And if you can't sell that to your new people, that's to me, in my, I guess, my experience, the supervisors who have been able to just create great work cultures have a real sense of direction where they're going.
So does the employee have any kind of responsibility in setting that tone for the culture as well?
It's totally shared.
Okay.
In other words, when I'm onboarding a brand new person, I got to get to know who they are, okay, their personality. I need to know what they're passionate about, and I need to, part of my job is to help them align with the big cult, with the big vision for where we're going. That way, I basically, when I offer the job to them, I say, can you come on board and help us with your gifts and talents? For most people, if they hear that, they're going to stay. I mean, it's just, you know, now you got some other things you got to deal with, because you're going to have people coming into a new workplace and you got personality conflicts and things like that. But overall, the sustaining piece of that is if I come into an organization and I feel like my gifts and talents are being used, and I can help with the meeting, and that's gonna wake me up in the morning. I'm not gonna be looking at the clock at 5 minutes till five and trying to get out of here. You know,
which that happens quite a bit, right?
You're gonna be sitting there going, it's Friday's coming, good.
I can't lie to you guys. I've found myself in positions in the past, not in the leadership roles, in roles where I've just been part of that regular workforce. Okay. Maybe not even in management of any sort of kind, and realizing that the talents aren't being used, but the potential of the culture is there for positive improvement, and they're trying to push, and you see that middle just stuck, just frozen, not moving forward. And I found myself sticking it out and saying, hey, if I see the change happening at the top, and down at the bottom, we're motivated and coming together, and we believe in that vision, but that middle bracket is kind of locking everything up. You know what? Let's stay the course. If you enjoy the job, you like the people that you work with, you like that overall mission statement, but everything in the middle really sucks. You know, maybe we just got to stick it out. And we're not going to backstab or step on people. We're just going to stick it out, and we're going to put the pressure in place, because that vision up top is ideal. That's that pinnacle where we're all trying to get to. We're in line down here on the bottom, but in the center, we're stuck a little bit there. Have you seen a lot of organizations come to you with that issue? And if so, like, what are some good steps for leaders to overcome that issue in the middle, where things get stuck and frozen as you're changing that culture, improving retention, and onboarding those people in line with that new vision?
I think once you got the vision in place and you're getting to know that those employees, I think, it's this with the team building piece, the bonding, you're going to have to get people together. But, pretty much a lot of conversations that I have with leaders is that they're running systems, they're running processes, they're running, in the old days, it was, shuffling paper.
Right.
But if you go back even farther, I think it was even more like working in a factory, where you got this product at the end of the day or end of the week, you got to get it out the door. And if supervisors or leaders can actually get the factory out of the, and I'm not saying the factory as far as something bad, I'm just saying that process where you show up and you just feel like you're another number.
That mentality, get that factory
mentality out. If you could do that, again, and you got a great vision of where you're headed, I mean, people are going to get excited about it, and they're going to feel like they have a piece of that they can actually change things. And that's that autonomy that I think some of these people who write books talk about. Motivation for us as humans. If we can work autonomously, uh-huh, and we can work on our skills and be a master of what we do, that's worth more than money. I mean, talk to people who actually leave jobs. They leave because it was a bad situation with their boss. Mm-hmm. It's not because of the money necessarily. I've talked to managers before who have they're in their division. They have like maybe 200 people or more, and this one guy, I'm not gonna say any names, but I said, he told me, he says, they're going to work at another place. I said, well, for what reason? He says, well, they pay 25 cents more on the dollar. I said, 25 cents more on the dollar? He goes, yeah. He says, I said, is that really it? He goes, well, that's what I heard. I said, okay, well, let's go find out. So for the next 6 months, this guy shows up at 7 o'clock in the morning, meeting these frontline workers. And he asked him questions, brought him donuts and juice, and said, look, why are people going to this other organization? Is it really for 25 cents more? And you know what they said? No. It's because of our relationship with our supervisors. Okay, well, that was impactful, right?
Yeah.
That changed that guy's life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And that changed that whole organization. But he didn't know.
So you're saying that its culture has a lot to do with it. Your relationship with your leader has a lot to do with it. And the leader is responsible of setting that tone. No, actually, you said it's shared by the leader and the employee.
It's a shared vision, yeah.
So if it's a shared vision, it's you can show people how to get that tempo going for the culture, but you have to hire the right people as well.
Right.
So as a hiring authority, what is the one thing that you look for to in somebody? What kind of talent, what kind of hunger do you look for that makes you think as that leader that that employee is going to succeed in that organization, in that culture?
This is another podcast. that's a lot. I tell hiring authorities or people who are, you know, supervisors, you know, when you're interviewing somebody, you know, you're listening for, you know, you're listening for a lot, but you're also listening to what their attitude is. I mean, if they're blaming people, they're blaming their old boss and they're blaming their old coworkers, that's in an interview. I mean, you're listening to what they're saying about where they're coming from. And I to me, I mean, you need to hire somebody with skills. You know, don't get me wrong, skills are important. Yeah. They need to know the job. They need to be able to do the job. But you listen for attitude. I mean, you're listening for, you know, what, and then again, you know, what do they want to do? Because what they're excited about and what they're passionate about, if there's a place that I can fit that in with where I'm headed as far as my, you know, as far as the job goes, mm-hmm. it's going to make it easier for me.
So this is why I'm asking, because okay. I would think that at least me, I look for somebody who's hungry. I look for somebody who has at least the minimum qualifications for the job,
right?
But they have a work ethic that is unmatched. They get in, they roll up their sleeves. They're a team player.
Yeah, you listen to yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, a big team player. So I just read an article a couple of weeks ago on the Wall Street Journal. This is by Sue Schellenberger. And the article that she writes, she says that you could be too much of a team player, that if you are too much of a team player, that it can be bad for you, for your brand at work, and it can be bad for your colleagues. So, I mean, I don't know if you read that article. I think JC, I sent it to him, but I was conflicted with that because I'm thinking, here I am looking for somebody who could be a team player, somebody who says is a go-getter, always says yes. But then sometimes I do see some employees that they say yes too much, and then they get distracted. They get too much on their plate, and people start missing deadlines. So now I'm at a crossroads. So I'm just wondering if you believe that there could be too much of a team player in an employee, and how would that affect any organization?
I think the word team, I think team player is not the right words to be using. You have a spirit of teamwork. But if you're the kind of person that for whatever reason you got too many things on your plate,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna hit the wall. I mean, you're gonna be stressed out, and that's gonna affect everybody. And so the production, you know, your own productivity is gonna go down if you got 183 projects on your list. You know, I mean, yeah. I've actually talked to leaders. Managers who actually will tell me, look, you know, I got 150 something project going right now. I'm like, you go what?
Wow.
How do you, right. And so then they, because of that, they become the bottleneck for anything really. I mean, it can lead to a very toxic environment. And it's not good for the person's health, because I got a chance to look at that article you're referring to. I mean, I think it can, being too available and putting too much on your plate in the name of being a team player, or being, you know, a team spirit, I think that can actually hurt you.
So it's one piece about that article that really stuck out to me. It's, and I'm just going to read that piece verbatim. Many white collar employees who in the past would have worked side by side with a few colleagues now spend 85% of their time collaborating with multiple team of coworkers via meetings, emails, conference calls, or instant messaging, all often across several time zones. So 85% of their time. So that's, I mean, I guess from a business owner's perspective, go ahead, JC. I see you pointing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, how did that quote start again? Could you just read that first sentence again real quick?
Many white collar
employees. Why is it got to get, why is it always got to go to race? Why is it got to be about race? Like at the end of the day, I don't understand. It doesn't matter what collars we wear, you know?
You're right. It doesn't matter what collars
you shouldn't be laughing at these terrible jokes. You really should. You really should.
I really am because I know you.
I'm trying to lighten the mood. I see some tension in the room over there on the Skype back and
really?
Forth. Yeah, of course. You're reading things verbatim. Let me cite the code of law in 8 U.S.C. 17. You know, I'm like, holy shit, man. Just have a conversation with the guy. So
it's the humidity. It's the humidity down here.
It's the humidity.
Absolutely.
Or the Sky Vodka that's right here in the picture.
All right, so Rick, do me a favor. Take the quote, throw it out the window, and give us a summary of that real quick. What's it saying? What's it saying, man? White collar workers suck. 85% of them. Come on, say it again.
Give me a chance. 85% of white collar workers spend. No, see, I said it wrong. No. That many white-collar workers spend 85% of the time just talking to other people, collaborating. That's it.
All right. Actually, and then you're part of that team. You're seeing people in your office. You're sitting there busting your hump, or maybe you're leading a team, and you guys are like, you're drilling down and just taking care of what's got to get done. But then three-quarters of that entire office is walking around having their good coffee chats, maybe talking about the UFC Golden Knights for 17 hours during like one day. It's like, holy crap, what's going on here? You lose your gourd a little bit. You can't tell me that out of that number and everything that you said, that the majority of what they're talking about is all meetings about work stuff either. I mean, come on. How many people sit there in the office talking about, like, do you have the TPS reports for 7 hours? They don't do that, you know? They're talking about NASCAR and football and everything in between while other people are working and seeing it happen.
So, correct. It's not everything is work 24/7. So out of your 8-hour workday, I mean, I don't expect my employees to work the full 8 hours. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be some talk there. There's going to be some downtime.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, they're human. Yeah, so they are. So, but I mean, I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is it's reading this article. It kind of got to me because when I consult with leaders and I'm trying to help them hire the best people they possibly can, one of the things they look for is somebody who's a team player and who can multitask. And what this is saying essentially is multitasking is not necessarily a good thing.
It's not a good thing. See, the thing is, I mean, we're talking about technology.
Okay.
We're so connected.
Yeah, we are.
I mean, that article brings out the fact that, I mean, you're on 24/7. And as there's other studies that talk about if you do not disconnect, if there's not some boundaries in your life, in work as well as, I guess, personally, you're going into the danger zone. I mean, as far as, you know, your personal health and your emotional health. I mean, some very toxic stuff there, being overcommitted and always on demand. And
hang on. What you're basically saying is don't date your coworkers. That's what you're saying, right? in a way.
Don't date your coworkers, right? Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
So how do we get to the point?
Some cultures do demand that their employees spend after hour time together.
There you go.
Culture can be causing you some stress there, especially if you don't like to hang out with your coworkers.
So how do we get to that point? How did we get to the point where we are so demanding of our talent, where we demand so much of their time, so much of their attention above and beyond the 9-to-5? So how do we get to that point?
Ooh, I know how.
How?
We're in the culture where everyone gets a trophy. So, ergo, if you take that same type of environment and move it forward, everyone's already getting a trophy along the way anyways. Everyone's always constantly engaged. So then at some point, where do you draw that line? And there seemed to maybe be a generational shift at one point in time where, okay, maybe we can't give our coworkers trophies. Maybe we can't give the team trophies. So let's just make sure everyone's hanging out and having fun. Because when Karen was here, we used to go bowling and she was awesome. Karen's not there anymore. I need a new Karen. I
so
want
no
to
more
give
bowling.
New Karen gets new so, trophy.
So what do you mean by trophy? So are you saying that everybody actually, I don't know. So what do you mean by everybody gets a trophy at work?
Come on, man. You know this. Going back over like the past 20, 30 years, as kids were being brought up, it was that theme generationally for a while there where all kids playing sports were getting trophies along the way. And
Got
then
it.
That it seemed to be that same generational culture there for maybe a good 20 years or so. Also had these thoughts that they were exuding then into the workforce. And maybe in the same way that every kid gets a trophy on a sports team, every employee of mine needs to make sure that they're part of this team at the same time, no matter what. And you guys hate each other, but we're going bowling because new Karen needs a trophy. I don't know. I'm pitching ideas. Talk to me.
Yeah, I would say that if you get your culture right, I don't think you need the trophies. I don't think you need the everybody gets a trophy.
I haven't seen that though, right? It's I get what JC is saying. I have seen some employees who come into the workforce that they expect a lot more for a lot less work. So I guess that comes from them growing up in an environment that everybody gets a trophy. They don't know what it feels like to be defeated. They don't know what it feels like not to get something for nothing. So I do see that, but I also see the anguish in their face when they get punched in the gut. And they're like, wow, what do you mean that I'm going to get written up for not hitting my goal? It's a thought that counts. Well, no, it doesn't, Johnny. It doesn't. You need to perform at work. So I have seen a lot more of that today. So I guess that's what he's trying to say. But it's I just haven't seen – no, I'll take it back. I have seen some employees who really take that really bad and they leave. Right, they leave and go work somewhere else. Even if this organization is their first one, they go somewhere else. They see that it's the same thing, and then they leave. They go somewhere else that they see it's also the same thing, and they start realizing, "Holy shit, this is the real world." And then they come back realizing the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
So I get what JC is saying from that perspective, but when having the Karen at work and making sure that you have your employees who are coddled. Is that something you as a leader would want to do? Would you want to coddle employees? You want to make sure employees are happy where they are? Or you want to ensure that they feel like they're accomplishing something?
I think it goes back to that thing I said earlier. It's the leader, and the leader's got to know their employees.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't, you need to know what drives why and then why your employees are actually there. I mean, if you don't know that, I think you're going to have a hard time. And it's not a one size fits all when it comes to leadership. Unfortunately, we kind of throw it as, okay, well, I got a group of employees here. I'm, you know, one size fits all as far as employee engagement awards. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. I mean, not everybody wants to be, you know, not everybody wants to, you know, have flowers and balloons. Some people would like something else. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't. Do you, JC? You like flowers? JC likes flowers and balloons.
Okay.
This is birthday today. We should give him some flowers and some balloons.
You're killing me.
That's what we should do.
You're killing me right now.
He's working.
No, it really is his birthday today.
He's working.
He's working on his birthday. Do you always work on your birthday, JC?
I've been hard-pressed to think of a year where I haven't. I'll put it that way. Maybe back when I was a kid, I didn't, but yeah. More recent years, I have. Hey, question for you. Speaking about those, no, dead serious, I've been sitting on this one. In regards to the employees and people not always getting together, spending off time, maybe when they don't want to get together in the mandatory fun sense, let's hone in on that real quick. Leadership, management, building a team. You have two workers. They're both good workers. They're on two opposite ends of the spectrum. They don't get along. How can you help coach a leader, or how would you advise a leader to deal with the adversity between two top performers on their team to improve performance and head down a new path?
I just got the finger.
I'm pointing at him. I'm not giving him the finger.
Yeah.
That was... God, we need video on this. We really do.
Okay, yeah. So
dealing with adversity on teams, adversity between two coworkers on a team and the leaders looking for some help on what can I do to remediate or to fix some of these issues, et cetera.
That's where the skills of the supervisor as far as their team building skills are going to come in. One is if you don't have trust on the team, you're not going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. But say you do have trust. Now you're dealing with personality styles. Mm. And you could have two people who are very direct, hard charging. If they're working in the same cubicle area together, you're going to have some fireworks. You're going to have some lightning bolts because you got two people who are hard driving. They don't mind sharing their opinions verbally, and they're take charge people, and they're going to basically run over anybody else that's, you know, within their wake. So because I have a small team, back at my workplace, I have, I used to think, well, I'm not going to hire anybody that's like a really direct style like that. But unfortunately, since I'm not a hard charging direct personality style like that, I need those people on my team. Because they're the ones that are going to get us off, you know, get us going, kick us in the gluteus maximus and get us going. I need those kind of people. But if I got two of them working together, we're going to have some serious, you know, we're going to have some talks and work it out. And I'm going to have to mediate that as a leader.
Wouldn't that be the point, though, when you decide which one of the two is your favorite? So then you start giving them the premier work and you make sure that they get promoted, and then the other one, you make them feel like crap, but then you cry and tell them you're sorry. That's a good way to deal with it, right?
You know what? That's a terrible workplace culture.
Okay. No, I'm not using any specific references from my own life, but no, that's
fine. You need to leave quick.
Gotcha.
Find another job.
Well, it's... I understand what Craig is saying. So, JC, about 12 years ago, Craig and I, we used to work for the same organization. And it's Craig. Would you consider yourself somebody who's introvert or extrovert?
I'm definitely introverted. Even though I do presentations and workshops and things, you know, I have to. It's an act.
So are you somebody who would be systematic or free spirit?
Oh, definitely. Not free spirit. No, okay. I'm sitting here with one person right here that's great.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
So back then, he was the introvert, systematic type of presenter, and he and I would do presentations together, and I was the free spirit, extrovert kind of a guy. And when we will go up there, I know that's how he thinks, that's how he listens.
But that's how we knew that about each other.
Correct. We did.
And it worked.
And we played off each other. And then in front of everybody there, it worked. It really worked because it helped us get the point across on the importance of understanding everybody's listening styles and communication styles.
But our leadership at that point didn't know that about us.
They really did not.
We just figured it out.
On our own.
Yeah.
Didn't we take a public bus system for a training for the firefighters one time?
It wasn't in Buffalo.
No, it wasn't in Buffalo.
You guys don't have buses up there, do you?
But yeah, people mainly do trust falls off them or jump into tables on fire at Bill's tailgates. We have trust falls.
Yeah, that was my world before I came where I'm at now.
What, jumping on tables on fire?
Zip lines and climbing walls.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, you know, that's what I used to do.
Yeah, that's right. You did have a company before where you did a lot of team building events and people died, right? Did people die with the zip lines and that's why you don't have it anymore? No.
But that's talk about building some trust.
Yeah. What, people dying?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. But when you're climbing, you're doing a zip line type. I'm sorry. Like fast roping, stuff like that,
if you're holding the rope for me and I'm climbing 40 feet in the air and then I have to come down safely and you got the rope.
That's trust.
We're going to have a different relationship after that one. Yeah. Hug you.
Have you ever had a situation where you had somebody up there and then they just did not trust a person down below?
Oh yeah.
So how did that go?
The facilitator down on the ground starts putting their stuff on to basically go up there and try to rescue them. Yeah. Well, you already have your stuff already on. You're ready to go. But I'm just saying there's a lot of talk through that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you may have to go up there and talk them down too.
All right. I mean, I guess that's what would happen then.
Yeah. We got no way for that though.
Have you done that, JC, up in Buffalo?
Well, I did stuff like that when we were in the Marine Corps, my friend, but not here in the civilian world.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. In the civilian world, have you ever had to do a team building event where you really had to trust your coworker with your life, pretty much?
Yes. I went to a holiday party at my boss's house one time. A lot of trust involved with that one. Tons of drinking, fruitcakes, crazy stuff, man. Yeah. You know, they bake baked goods. You got to make sure, you know. Hey, gluten-free, nut-free, a lot of trust. Tons of trust, you know. That's pretty much the extent of it, bro.
Oh, got it. Okay. All right.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. He's talking about gluten-free now.
We're talking about personality styles.
We are, yeah. So you're introvert, systematic. So
by the way, I do need to interject. Craig, I want to thank you for keeping the show on track. Greatly appreciate that. Rick, I don't know where you're at today. Well, Craig, you come back anytime.
I'm free spirit. So that's why Craig and I get along.
All right, yeah. So back to it. Go.
So what do you recommend for why are you laughing at me? So what do you recommend for a leader who really has an issue with communicating, just having some trust within his employees? What are you recommending? So for people who can't see,
who edits this?
JC has this huge face right on the camera. He's really excited to hear the answer to this question.
What's the question? I am.
So what do you recommend a leader to do when they just don't have – I don't want to say they don't have trust in their employees, but when he or she have employees who don't trust each other, what do you recommend that leader to do about the trust issues within his team?
You're going to have some crucial conversations with individuals and then with the group together or whoever's the parties are. Yeah.
What does that sound like?
That conversation?
Yeah.
Was it? Okay.
All right. I don't trust JC. Right? I'm up there. Actually, yeah. I'm up there. I'm supposed to fall. He's supposed to catch me. Right? I don't trust him. What do you say to me?
Well, one is we're not going to do that activity.
Okay. Especially if I trusted him to catch me, I'll crush him. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. You're going to have to get to the root for what's causing the distrust. Okay. I mean, I've walked into actually boardrooms and people are having meetings and there may be one or two people that are got their, you know, their chairs turned, looking out the window. I mean, you can smell distrust walking into a building. You can see the way people sit by how close they sit, how they can talk to people.
Yeah.
You can feel
absolutely.
It. You can smell distrust.
Yeah.
And it's not a good smell. And it's, so I'm just saying you're going to have trust. And that happens a lot though, from what I've noticed. Is that you're a brand new supervisor and you've inherited some people who may have been with the organization for a while, and you're just a long line of supervisors, you know, that have come along, and they're looking at you going, okay, you know, what's the difference? And so you got a lot of work, you know, you're going to have some crucial conversations. You know, one thing that I've seen that for supervisors to be able to, maybe resurrect a long-term employee that's got maybe a little bit of a bad attitude. I usually say, look, you need to have three questions. One is you need to say, maybe it's not three exactly, but the conversation is that, what are some ideas that you have that can make the team better? Okay. And a follow-up to that question is that, how's this team doing? And then the third question or so is eventually you get around to it. And some people have gone their whole careers and never been asked this question. Hmm. And that question is basically this: how are you doing?
The entire career.
Yeah, I've met people who have worked in organizations for 30 years. They look 15 years older because they're all stressed out and everything.
JC's pointing at himself.
Well, okay. I'm pointing at me, yes.
But some people have never, they've been there long enough, they've got some ideas. You know, I heard a statistic one time that said that most organizations only tap into about 30% of their creativity and their brain power, which means that a lot of folks come to work every day, they see ways that could make things could be better, but nobody ever asks. Huh. And so when it comes to the team dynamic, you know, if the supervisor doesn't say, well, how can we get better as a team? What are your ideas? And then ultimately kind of put a bow on that conversation and look him in the eyes and go, hey, Ricky, How are you doing? From a human standpoint, how are you doing? That right there can build trust. So, thank you, and I'll send you a bill.
Thank you. I know. I feel much better. So, it's JC. So you're noticing a recurring theme here: the human aspect, trust, human trust, human trust. These are things that I see.
Takes a long time to develop.
It does, in just seconds to destroy.
It can be destroyed instantly. Right?
So I've seen a lot of organizations where that just doesn't exist as far as the trust piece. And trust comes from being human as well, right? So you have to understand how the other human being works, how they talk, how they think.
Can I say something real quick?
Go.
Okay. Trust.
Yeah.
You have to be a trustworthy person yourself. And if you're hiring somebody just because they can do the job and they got the skills, but the character's not there, and the integrity's not there. Yep. People can smell lack of integrity a mile away. Yep. Lack of insincerity a mile away. But just because you can come in and you got the best looking spreadsheets and you got all the technology and you can, no, in the long run it's character, and whether you're a trustworthy person, you're setting. Remember what we talked about. What, 5 hours ago? Just kidding.
Really? Wow. We've been here that long, huh?
Remember what we talked about? I mean, I think I even said it. You know, it's the fact is that, you know, you trust, it takes a long time. And it has to go back to, it goes back to that leader. Hmm. And if they're not trustworthy or they're not, you're not going to be able to have a high performance team.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't disagree with you. Not that I'm looking for a reason to, but this is something JC and I have been talking about since the beginning of the podcast. That at the end of the day, that's exactly what you need. You have to be able, first of all, be a human being, be genuine in your humanity, and you have to be able to engage your employees in a way that they genuinely trust you. And the way you do that, from my opinion, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is you give them enough opportunities to screw you over. So you give them that opportunity to say, here's a project. I want you to work on it, right? You're either going to look good or look bad, but here you go. I'm not going to micromanage you. I know what your strengths are. I know what your opportunities are. And if you make a mistake, just let me know and we'll figure it out. That right there, if you give that opportunity to the right person, they'll take it, they'll cherish it. Right. But if you give that opportunity to the wrong person, they'll show you pretty quickly why you made that mistake. But now it's up to you to say, okay, bye to that person. But 99% of the time, the right people will take advantage of that opportunity to really cherish that trust that you're sharing with them.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people have a hard time with that.
I mean, yeah, earlier I talked about, you know, leadership development.
Yeah.
And as far as leaders go, you know, you're going to have to make sure that person that's coming on board to be your leader is going to have those kind of some of those same skills that you just talked about.
So. Yeah. What do you think, JC?
Question that I have for you right now is in the culture of trust, as we're evolving and the workforce is changing, if we've got that key decision maker stuck in the middle right there, who maybe aren't the most trustworthy, but you, the leader, have inherited. And now they're going to be the ones that are deciding who is getting the new jobs that are going to be filling these roles and ranks down at that entry level and working their way up as we build this new culture. How do we get them to think the proper way, more like that trustworthy human? Do we just have to start firing people? I mean, where do you draw that line between I can't change and evolve the core decision makers that I need that I've inherited? I just need to clean house.
You want to take that? I mean, I've got my answer, but I really want to hear yours.
Ricky, well, you can go first
if you talk about that midline supervisor who has a lot of say about the culture. When you come into a leadership role, and this is where if you don't prepare your new leaders coming up, and you don't actually have that honest conversation and say, look, if you're coming from the front lines and more than likely you are a rock star where you were, what you were doing, everybody recognized the fact that you were a great worker and maybe you got some leadership potential, And because whatever, maybe it looks better, you know, the salary's more or whatever, because it's, you know, now you're a supervisor. A lot of people really don't take that time to go to even, and they don't even aware until they get there. And then it's too late. They can't go back. They've crossed the line and become a supervisor. And the very first day when they get to be a supervisor, it's not about you anymore. It's about you developing them. It's all about people now. It's all about the other humans that you're having to collaborate with and work and try to get to, and all their messiness as being humans, and you got to for them to work together.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people don't, and we don't prepare people for that. And so when somebody gets that job promotion, they cross over and now they're the leader. A lot of people would go, you know what? I just want to go back. I don't want to do this anymore, but it's too late.
Yeah.
You can't go back. Right.
Yeah.
And so we're stuck with these people now. Now these supervisors we got, and a lot of times they become toxic. They become, I don't know, they become jaded, or they become the bad attitudes or whatever, because they're not in the right spot.
Yeah.
And that's where the leadership above them, the corporate leadership above them, the people who are setting direction and vision and mission, you know, where we're going, where the organization is going. If you don't do that transition really well, you know, you're gonna have people who are leaving, and you're always gonna be in this churning, rehiring process that just takes time. And it can just, and I've seen organizations that really destroys them. You know, they go out of business.
Yeah, they do. That, or even worse, they stay in business.
They stay in business, and then
worse,
and then, you know, in customer service, it goes viral.
Yeah, it would. It's so. My answer would be along those same lines, right? It's a little bit shorter answer from my perspective would be that if you inherit that kind of environment, you really have to be an expert in communicating what your vision is going to be. But you have to be really good in letting them know where you see this organization going in the future and how important each and every one of those employees are in that vision. But it's only important if the employee wants to be there for that, right? If the employee does not want to be there on this new vision for that organization, then you got to have that conversation with them on what happens if they stay and what happens if they self-eject. However, if they stay and they don't want to align with the vision, they're going to be ejected, right? So you're giving them that opportunity to let them know this organization is heading west. I know you thought it was going to New York, but it's really going to California right now.
That's the thing. Most organizations that I've come across has a what's called a probationary period. Well, you know what?
If
you don't use that probationary period the right way, you're stuck in a lot of cases. But then that's where angels fear to tread. I mean, we're dealing with people don't want to have those crucial conversations, and so it's like it's just easier. Well, I this person's going to change. Well, I'll be able to fix this person.
Look, I've always said you need two things to be a leader. You need to have people skills and a backbone. You don't have either one of those two things, you have no business being in a leadership position.
That's what I'm saying. People cross that line. They become leaders now. And then they're like, oh, crap. I made the worst decision of my life. But I can't tell anybody. I can't go home and tell my wife.
I can't,
you know, my kid, you know, I got this salary now.
He's exactly right. Who's going to fall on their sword like that? No one.
Yeah.
Most people in this society, in this work culture, are just going to stand up and, no, I know exactly what I'm doing. I did my previous job for 17 years. And let me tell you about what I did. Tell me about what you're going to do. You know, we're working together today. I appreciate your history. That's great. Let's evolve and move forward. A lot of people aren't going to turn back. Maybe there needs to be a clause in some of these new hire contracts or in the new promotional probationary periods. You know, you have effective 20 days to decide, you know, like a lemon law kind of thing. Send them back. Yeah, just go back. Go back to your old job.
An employee lemon law.
It could start.
That would be great.
It could start, since we're talking about HR, right? It could start with the actual job description looks like. Because down at the very bottom, you could have in bold letters, it's your job to make things better around here.
There it is.
That's not in any job description I've ever seen. It's your job, Ricky, to make things better around here. And then the other thing that could be underneath that would be this, Ricky. You're paid to tell us what you think.
There it is.
Because I've had people who have walked into my office and they're staring at me and they get this funny look on their face and I'm like, what's wrong? And they're like, oh, nothing. I'm like, oh, nothing. You know, and it's usually that new employee who doesn't know what to say. They want to say something. And then so I just go ahead and let them, you know, I just go ahead and let them have it. You know, I'm saying, look, you're like, I'm paying you to tell me what you think.
So
that's when they pass out.
CPR. I was going to say, here's the thing. It's fine for you to say that, to say, Ricky, you are paid for you to tell me what you think. It's all fine and dandy until I actually tell you what I think.
Well,
then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Well, no. We can't go down that road.
Yeah.
So you have to be I don't want to say honest. You have to be courageous enough to listen to what the employees have to say.
Right.
And then do something with that information. What's the point of me telling you what I think if you're not going to do anything with it?
Leadership is courage.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it may not be something that you can use right then.
Mm-hmm.
It may be something that may take a while to get there, but you're gonna throw cold water onto somebody who's basically like, you know, if they're starting to generally share their ideas. I mean, that's part of the culture that you want, right? I mean, you want to have this engagement, not somebody who's out there in the parking lot, you know, who's checking out. I won't say the websites aloud, but you know, to find a job, right? They're looking because they want to be engaged, but they there's not a place for them to be engaged. So anyway,
so I'm with you. I agree with you 100%.
Okay, I'm getting passionate about this guy.
You are. I can tell.
Know.
Would you like some more Sky Vodka?
No, I don't.
No, you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay.
We'll wait till after.
Just say all right. Yeah. So I'm with you 100%. All I'm saying is we have to make sure that if a leader actually opens that door, that leader should really do something with the information. There's no point in saying, tell me what you think, and then that person grabs the information and does nothing with it. Nothing at all. Especially if you got an employee who's deciding to step out of their comfort zone and say, I really wish ABC would happen. And they took that leap of faith, and as a leader won't do the same. So all I'm saying is the leader should be just as courageous as that employee. Sure. To take that leap of faith. So
I agree.
Yeah. So that's another podcast. I know we're way out of time, right, JC? What are we at 4 hours already?
Yeah, we're somewhere near there. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's been a minute.
Okay. All right. I'll send it back to you because Craig and I can be here. We have about a quarter bottle left of vodka that we still need to go up.
Hey, that's fine. Not a problem. Hey, going around the room real quick, just some final thoughts to wrap things up. Ricky, you first, and then over to Craig, please.
It's from my perspective, it's nothing that I haven't said before on the show. It's in order for you to encourage a culture of trust, you have to exhibit that trust yourself, and you have to be able to put yourself out there both emotionally and mentally. So you can, I don't want to say get screwed over, but you really have to put yourself out there so your employees can see you as a human being. So from my perspective, put yourself out there, right? That way your employees can see you and follow you and then have that calling for you. So that's from my point of view. What about you, Craig?
I think two things. One is that if you're a wannabe supervisor, if you think that you want to be a leader at some point in your organization or any organization, you need to answer the question of why are you taking that step into that role? And it's not about you. It's about them.
Mm.
And if you haven't answered that one yet, you're going to be it's not going to be good. And the other is that for organizations that are out there, and you're struggling right now because the workplace culture stinks and people are leaving or whatever, you have a low trust environment, it starts with your leaders. And it starts with those frontline supervisors. It starts with the top, but it works its way down to those frontline supervisors. And you're not going to lose by investing in those people.
Mm.
Thank you.
There you go.
Over on this end here, I'd just like to say we all know and understand that change doesn't happen overnight. We thoroughly understand and grasp the concepts that evolution will take place at some point in time within our organizations. But the key thing for some people that may be listening to this in HR departments across the country, as you hear the words that Craig and Rick are talking about today, if you find inspiration in this and your work environment is not currently built this way, don't quit. Don't give up. You have the potential to change your environment. And as long as leadership is already bought in and heading down that path of changing the culture, let them know you're on board. And keep moving forward, because there are professionals that think like you out there, and we got two of them on the show, and it's been my pleasure having you both on. With that being said, Ricky, over to you for some little bit of wrap-up. How's some of the best ways that people could reach us?
So on Twitter, you can reach us at PodcastHR. We've got a lot of people, JC, coming just asking us questions and some suggestions for topics for the show. On Facebook, you can reach us at HR Talk Podcast, or you can just email us, ebias@biasco.com, or you can text us or call us, 407-501-8425.
And ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm JC on the other end of the line. On behalf of Craig and Rick, it's been our pleasure being here for you this week. Drive safe. Have a good night.